change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello again, this is Mickey Desai, your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. Happy to be talking with Matthew Martin Hall again, who's back for a second round with the Nonprofit Snapcast. Matthew, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Mickey? It's good to be back.
Yeah, glad to have you back. You are, of course, the creative and marketing director for Freedom Writers Foundation and the lead evangelist for Isaac Culture. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that is exactly it. Added a new title as to the list.
So I have to ask, what does that mean, lead evangelist, and what is Isaac Culture?
So Isaac Culture is a really cool product that kind of just aligns a lot of my interests kind of motivations thus far. So what it is it's part of a due diligence company that works in a lot of mergers and acquisitions, or once worked in mergers and acquisitions. Now they do a bunch of other things, and that's Isaac AI, which is the sort of parent company. Uh-huh. And then Isaac Culture is a sort of 28-point assessment that companies, organizations of any kind can use to see how aligned they are culturally with other members of that organization. At any tier, at any level, massive organizations, smaller organizations. I mean, it's a really cool product that has been proven to increase productivity just by aligning people, or just making people aware of how aligned or not aligned employees and employers and everybody in the mix are with the culture. So
you found a way to measure, I mean, I'm sure there are several ways to measure culture, but you have found a good way to measure culture, I take it?
Yeah. So it's actually derived, and you know what? I always butcher his name, Geert Hofstede.
Okay.
So it's developed from his principles and his ideas around organizational anthropology. And there are sort of these, imagine the idea of culture in an organization as being just a bunch of circles that are all kind of like a massive 28-point Venn diagram, so to speak.
Yep.
Where these different aspects of culture are sort of overlapping in some areas, not overlapping in others. And all of these little circles that are part of this giant Venn diagram are constantly moving and shaking and sort of adapting depending on, you know, answers here or answers there. And so what we've done is we've taken a lot of his philosophy and have adapted it into the 28 points at which we measure sort of where people are culturally and how they, not just how they view the culture at the workplace or in an organization, but how they feel they participate in that culture, and whether or not it is something they enjoy participating in, or are excited about participating in, or are less than excited about participating in. And so it aggregates all of this data based on some really like simple questions, which I think is the fun part about culture, is that it is this just massive abstraction, right? And it dictates so much, but it's so hard to define and so hard to make tangible. And so, you know, this test is sort of distributed amongst everybody in the organization. They take this assessment, and based on, you know, where they land, we are able to develop these 60-page data write-ups that we simplify, of course, but give employers who are interested in increasing productivity a huge insight into just where they line up with their employees culturally. And, you know, there have been stories where CEOs have broken down crying because they thought that everybody, they had the greatest work culture possible, but turns out most of the employees that they genuinely cared about actually hated the work culture that was there.
Wow.
And so it's a really, it's an interesting dynamic that is also very, very dynamic and constantly changing.
Sure. So let me ask for a second, 60-page report. What kinds of things are you measuring and what kinds of questions do you ask in this assessment? And clearly it's something that's a survey that's distributed online, right? It's not like a pen and paper kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, it can be online. We can also fill it out for them, but that's a whole different, that's a whole different thing, but yeah, it's distributed online. And the questions are, they're essentially sliding scales as to, how you view it. And my favorite are the just kind of the outliers that seem sort of nonsensical. Mm-hmm. Probably the most division that you get from any of these questions is simply the question as to whether or not a dress code exists in the workplace. Not what the dress code is, not whether or not you like the dress code, but whether or not you even have one.
Yeah.
And there is so much information hidden in those the variables of the way that question is answered that can reveal a lot more in regards to whether or not members of an organization are actually feeling like they're aligned with the culture of that organization and how they view it. So there are a lot of questions like that. I mean, there are more obvious ones like, you know, how do you feel about the sort of talk that happened, water cooler talk? Does water cooler talk even happen? How do you feel about, you know, water cooler talking and, you know, is that accepted or is that not? And, you know, what's the quality of it and all of that stuff. So it's all these little kind of intrinsic things that never really, that really get fleshed out based on what they speak to in terms of these like little, I'm going back to my giant Venn diagram image in my head. you know, where is this circle at this time and what is it intersecting with and all of those things. So,
sure.
You know, it's a really cool thing. And beyond just kind of an output of what, you know, what the answers to these questions are and where, you know, different hierarchical members of this organization land in regards to what they think it is, what it actually is and how they feel about it. Beyond those questions kind of just being broken down hierarchically, there's also intersectional information between some of them that is that leads to greater insights and deeper insights.
Right.
So you
said in your notes here to me that you think that organizational culture is more important now than ever. That maybe people think in pandemic organizational culture ceases to be important, but you're saying no, the opposite is true.
Absolutely. I mean, I think in our last conversation, we talked about how you know, I pivoted the Freedom Writers Foundation into digital landscape, which every organization had to go through. In the world. Every organization had to go through that. And I think that with these giant cultural shifts that happen, and I'm not just talking about the pandemic. The pandemic is a great example, but let's also talk about political unrest that's happening at the moment. Yeah. Let's talk and has been happening. You know, let's talk about all of the turmoil leading up to the election. Let's talk about, you know, Black Lives Matter reinvigorating and where people are landing on these and where they're drawing into their corners isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think that cultural relativity is an important thing to have when you're looking at different cultures and even microcosmically in an organizational setting. Cultural if it works for them, it works for them, whether or not you agree with those values or what have you. But I think that with all of these things, all of these pressures that are kind of pushing people into corners and making people kind of choose sides, there's a lot of internal friction that can be revealed just by simply, you know, having a friend's Facebook page and seeing that they posted something that was Black Lives Matter, and you see another person that you work with on their LinkedIn page, and they might have posted something that said All Lives Matter and something. And so we're all kind of intermingling in each other's worlds and everything's kind of rising and converging, which is sort of the nature of technology. I think culture is a kind of technology, and so I do think that everything's kind of bleeding into one another. And as we enter these sort of tumultuous times and things have to change, there is a shock that happens that gives us an opportunity to really kind of assess and look at what has been working, what hasn't been working, what needs to change, because the environment's changing. The environment's right. changing for everybody. And so it's a great opportunity for a lot of people, should they do the work or be interested in doing the work, to really get their organization aligned culturally. And we see numbers, I believe it was, and I might get this number wrong. I'm sorry, I don't have my note in front of me. I was searching for it. but something to the effect of like 30 to 40% increased productivity is seen amongst organizations that have high cultural alignment throughout all hierarchical levels. So when people are aligned, which makes sense, but you know, it's like the data that backs it up is helpful to kind of make something tangible out of these real, real complex abstractions like culture.
But doesn't culture also shift? I mean, you can measure it today and get a completely separate measurement tomorrow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think that's, you know, culture is as much a product of evolution as it is its own sort of instance of it. Cultures are constantly changing. I mean, we can look at, let's look at American culture from the 1950s to today. I mean, a relatively short amount of time considering the grand scheme of all life and everything, 70 years, but culturally within our, you know, things have really, really changed in the United States. And I think that that goes for pretty much everywhere. And I mean, even I think we could even say shorter amounts of time. We have, you know, we have let's again, and I'm not going to get political. I'm not going to get political, but it is not, it's not hard to say, and it's not political to say, I don't think, that over the last 4 years, culture has changed in America quite significantly.
Yes.
Based on the sort of political environment. And so, yeah, I don't think that it's I hope I'm not making it seem like it's a one and done kind of thing. This isn't something that you just, you know, you assess once and then, you know, you either get a thumbs up or you get a, you know, a thumbs down or what have you, and then you carry on. This right. is something that is continually needing to be worked on, especially as we have these sort of new impetuses coming in and sort of disrupting culture in whatever way that is, be it a social movement, be it a political reality, be it a global pandemic. You know, there are these things that are constantly shocking what we believe culture to be and how it operates. Because ultimately, you know, if we're to define culture, it is sort of the mechanism for which we develop these rules, these norms, and these mores and all of these things to help an organization kind of understand how to move, right? It's what right. greases the wheels.
So let me ask then, is it wise to, I mean, are we talking about homogenizing culture? Is that what the upshot of all this is? Is it wise to therefore minimize cultural shock? Aren't the differences sort of what drive us?
No, I hear what you're saying. I don't mm-hmm. think that homogenizing culture is necessarily the, I don't think that's necessarily the best avenue, because I do agree. I think that the differences between us is really what makes us, stronger. It's what helps us to develop into, you know, it's what helps us develop and evolve personally and as groups of people. And so I don't think that doing away with that difference, I think it's recognizing, I think the differences, are worth recognizing, acknowledging, and seeing how to work that in or work with that in the organizational setting. Right.
Right.
Not necessarily saying, well, you don't fit this culture, so you're out. it's more because you're so different, you're out. But instead, like, what are the things that are working? What make you productive? What helps you associate with this organization in a way that benefits and keeps greasing its wheels? And, you know, what are some things that maybe don't belong in the this organization, this organization's understanding and sort of evolution of culture?
Well, and so, let me play devil's advocate then, because I'm going to say, what happens if you come up with an assessment and you figure out that a prospective newcomer to your organization has diametrically opposite political views from you, but otherwise fits in many other different ways? Are we then giving license to disqualify people for stuff like that?
I don't think that gives license necessarily to disqualify based on political views. Mm-hmm. I think maybe that just points to us not including political views much in the general makeup of the organization.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's, you know, cause I know I work with people and I have worked with people that I have been diametrically opposed on, I mean, across the board, but we were still able to work together because we just kind of left those things out, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's necessarily, now that doesn't mean to say that there aren't people that can be sort of toxic to the culture. I mean, there are people who can kind of poison that well, but that's a little bit of a different thing than them having a different viewpoint and us just not kind of welcoming that into the parts of the organizational workspace or part of the organization. Yep. And somebody who just is not necessarily culturally disaligned, unaligned, yep. Unaligned.
yeah.
Not necessarily somebody who's culturally unaligned, but somebody who isn't willing to either do the work or is just kind of toxic to that workplace and the development of that culture.
Right.
Because to your point earlier, I think that you're right. Absolutely. 100% culture should constantly be changing, constantly be evolving. This isn't work that you do just once. But, you know, in that evolution, we're always trying to keep things moving, keep things better, hopefully make things better, or just keep it the way it is and make sure that the grease doesn't, you know, gunk up or start rusting any of the gears or anything, right. You know? So there is, I think, a caveat there.
Right. So what are the interventions then? You get the data, you figure out that you have, you know, numbers that you could point at and create a report for people to hopefully have, you know, tons of vocabulary on it, which helps them wrap their heads around the culture that's in front of them. What then are the interventions that happen? Are we talking about, you can't really force adaptation, can you?
You can't. I don't think you can. That's an interesting question.
I mean, it may not be a fair question. I apologize for that.
But, no, it's fine. It's fine. I'm thinking about it in real time, which I think makes it a good question. Can you force adaptation? You might be able to, but I don't think that that's the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. I go back into my, my evolution toolkit, and I think of Gould's punctuated equilibrium theory of evolution, which is the idea that if a change needs to happen, either people adapt to that, or not people, but an organism will adapt to that immediately, or much more rapidly, or it'll just die off. Right. And so I'm thinking that this might be one of those sorts of situations, and is not necessarily forced adaptation as much as just an acknowledgement that it needs to happen, and it needs to happen quicker than maybe other adaptations.
Right.
And, I don't think that the funny thing is that as nuanced and as abstract and as really kind of just complex as all of this is, I think that what it also goes to show is that these fixes, these interventions, can be a little more simple.
Yeah.
You know, there are bigger adaptations. Like if everybody's pissed off that they have to be on salary and they don't want to stay there, everybody's like shopping for another job because they want to be paid hourly or something like that. Right. Like that's, or because they want benefits, which can be expensive, you know, that's a bit of a more, that can be a tougher fix, you know, especially with, you know, budgets as they are now. Yeah. But like if people are just don't feel like they're being heard, you know, and we also can add like sort of demographic elements to this as well, to the assessment, you know, do you want to break this up based on not just like hierarchical ranking, which is sort of the default, but also, you know, based on gender identification, right?
Right.
So if, you know, do the women in your workplace feel like they're being heard by upper management? Do they feel like they're being heard by mid senior management? Or, you know, is that something that, you know, or do people feel like women in upper management or in mid-level management, do they feel like they're listening back, and to whom are they listening back to?
Yeah.
You know, so there are ways that we can also take those nuances and make that a simpler change. Some changes are and interventions are a little more complicated, but a lot of it really is just. And I think that this is just kind of a this is going to sound like a really hyper simplified answer, but like a lot of it, I feel like gets solved by just talking to people.
Sure.
You know, like I think that, you know, we can give you 60 pages of data and everything like that, and that's a good thing to have. And we summarize it and we do all of that. But at the same time, if you realize that, you know, employees on the lower end of the totem pole don't feel like they're being heard, don't feel like they're being, you know, considered in decisions or anything like that, and it's not working for them, because I mean, there could be a scenario where they don't feel heard, but they're okay with it. I mean, that's a possibility too. And if that works for them, that works for them.
Right.
But you know, I think that really just having a conversation with them, or having these harder conversations with data in front of you, can yeah. really lead to a lot of positive growth and forward movement
right.
From the cultural perspective.
Right. So just to summarize, you're saying that culture is measurable, even if it's malleable as it changes, and that given the right level of openness and communication, you can actually leverage your findings about an organization's culture to improve things for the organization.
Absolutely. 100%. And I think it's important work to do. I mean, use our assessment, don't use our assessment, just like talk to people and talk to your employees. It's something that, you know, it's work that should be done more, I feel yeah. like.
It's fascinating stuff. Where can people go to learn more about the assessment?
Just go to www.issac.ai. So issac.ai, you go there, and then there's the entire due diligence platform. You scroll down, there's for mergers, there's Isaac Light, and then there's culture. And so if you just click on culture, learn more, you'll be able to see and, you know, email me and or call me, and we could talk about it. You know, it's a cool thing that has benefited a lot of groups, and you know, whether you're using our product or not, you know, culture is something that should, I feel like, always be talked about and understood, because it's just in general how we get along. You know, we're pack animals after all.
Yeah, I do. I agree. You know, organizational culture is everything. When it comes down to it, it's one of those things that's difficult to define, but very critical to the way that everybody's workday unfolds. I'm glad to see that you're involved in this kind of stuff, and wish you a ton of success with the endeavor.
I appreciate it, Mickey. I wish you all the success too. I love I love being on your podcast. I know this is only my second time, but hopefully there are more down the line. I can throw more random ideas at you and we can hop on the horn again sometime soon.
Anytime. I love it when that happens. Thank you, Matthew.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.